Welcome to Books on Monday, a podcast from Portico at portifex.com.
The Awful Truth is that The Abstinence Teacher by Tom Perata is both obviously serious and easily accessible. Must serious fiction be difficult? Must it make demands of the reader as a reader? The Abstinence Teacher is a critique of life in the American suburbs that is written in a language that is perfectly suited to that milieu. Most suburban fiction is written in the language of escape. The narrator speaks as someone who has fled the limited horizons of suburbia. For an idea of what I mean, listen to this passage from The Corrections, the novel by Jonathan Franzen that, by the way, I hold in the highest regard. The anxiety of coupons in a drawer containing candles and designer autumn colors. The coupons were bundled in a rubber band, and Enid was realizing that their expiration dates, often jauntily circled in red by the manufacturer, lay months and even years in the past, that these 100-odd coupons, whose total face value exceeded $60, potentially $120 at the Chiltsville supermarket, the double coupons, had all gone bad. Tilex, 60 cents off. Excedrin PM, a dollar off. The dates were not even close. The dates were historical. The alarm bell had been ringing for years. But suburban ears hear only the alarms that school superintendents, fire chiefs, and lifeguards sound. We can be sure that Enid Lambert, the coupon collector here, would find this discussion of her housekeeping very disagreeable, and not just because it invades her privacy. It would be embarrassing, unnecessary, perhaps even trivial. She would dispute the author's implicit claim that her interest in coupons and her failure to use them tells us something important about her. The Enid Lamberts of this world are not going to be reading The Corrections. The novel is written by a man who makes it clear on every page that he has left Enid Lambert's world behind for all time. Tom Perata's achievement is to present a critical picture of suburbia that Enid Lambert, younger Enid Lambert in any case, might actually read. The Abstinence Teacher is nowhere near so richly illuminated as The Corrections, but it does light up its characters in their own unaffected words. Of course, anyone can put down the unaffected words of vernacular speech. When Mr. Perata does so, however, the result is not only not banal, but enlightening, and precisely enlightening at that. Tim had never seen the Grateful Dead perform at the Civic Center Auditorium. They tended to prefer the larger outdoor venues in the area. But he had seen a number of concerts here in his younger days, including shows by 38 Special, The English Beat, and a couple of different incarnations of the Allman Brothers. In some ways, at least if you factored out the thick cloud of pot smoke that used to hover over the festivities, it felt utterly familiar to be sitting up here in the cheap seats with his buddies, looking down on the tiny musicians rocking out on stage, completely continuous with the rest of his life. He wondered how many other faith keepers could say the same thing. How many of them had batted beach balls up into the air while waiting for Supertramp to take the stage, or passed drunk girls overhead while Little Feet played a third encore? Tim Mason, the hero of The Abstinence Teacher, has hauled himself out of a drug-addled recklessness that cost him the wife of his dreams and the company of his daughter, Abby. Where once he would have slouched, drunk and stoned, he now sits with his new co-religionists and their pastor, a fundamentalist prophet who ardently endorses biblical family values. Although Mr. Perata has fun describing Dennis's conversion, which occurs at the electronics store where Dennis is a clerk, he never stops seeing where the man is coming from. This makes Pastor Dennis both more human and more insidious. Dennis was not a big man, and he had never done much exercise, but the spirit made him strong. He tossed all-in-one printers through the air like they were empty boxes, toppled a shelf of home theater components, scattered CDs like playing cards. A couple of his fellow employees tried to stop him, but they were too weak. A gaggle of customers, some moved by his passion, others excited by the possibility of violence, began to follow him as he made his way, inevitably it seemed, to the back of the store, where he planted himself in front of a $3,000 61-inch widescreen flat panel plasma TV that was playing Lara Croft Tomb Raider. "Whore!" he shouted. "Abomination!" There was some uncertainty about where the boombox came from, whether he'd picked it up on the way or someone had handed it to him just then, but there was no dispute about the fact that he raised the sleek black tube overhead, it was a JVC with built-in subwoofers, and hurled it at the screen, causing Angelina Jolie to disintegrate in a rain of shattered glass. Screams of protest and cheers of approval mingled as Dennis fell to his knees and called out to God. This is criticism from within, experience recounted in natural testimony that overlays abject sincerity with a fine sparkle of critical reservations. Mr. Parada does not have to tell us that the rally of the Faith Keepers is as vulgar as a rock concert, or that the store where Pastor Dennis gets religion is a temple of Baal in modern dress. Such allusions and references would not occur to his characters and would probably irritate his ideal reader, who is without doubt simply one of his more likable characters. More importantly, though, talk of Baal and vulgarity would put us at a distance from Tim and Dennis and the other fine and not-so-fine people in The Abstinence Teacher. We would be in a position to condescend, whether we wanted to be there or not. Mr. Parada is no leveler. He never suggests that the suburban world in which his characters live exhausts the possibility for meaningful existence and that all of us would be happy to inhabit it if we could. But he refuses to stand above or beyond it. This is Tom Parada's quiet triumph. He creates compelling drama out of his characters' doubts, second thoughts, and minor moral discomforts without uttering the faintest authorial peep. This is criticism without disaffection. Tim Mason is what used to be called the average sensual man. As such, he requires a bit of outside direction to steer him away from the peril of drowning in pleasure. Tim's inability to find or to take direction has already led to one complete collapse. Pastor Dennis's Tabernacle of the Gospel Truth, however, provides too much direction. As the novelty of self-mortification wears off, asking, "What would Jesus do?" ceases to be an altogether reliable tactic for defeating Satan. Over the past couple of years, Tim had applied this test on a number of occasions, and for a while at least, it had worked pretty much the way the pastor had predicted. Tim's companion had been highly observant and easily alarmed. Lately, though, he seemed to be slacking off a bit, or at least becoming more tolerant of human weakness. Tim knew this wasn't quite right. In the Gospels, the Son of God was often angry and harshly judgmental, despite his injunction against mortals passing judgment on one another. But there were times when the Jesus by his side seemed no more helpful than one of his old stoner buddies from high school, the kind of guy who'd watch you screwing up, then just chuckle and say, "Wow, dude, I can't believe you did that." It is evident almost from the start that Tim is going to end up in the worldly arms of Ruth Ramsey, the abstinence teacher of the title. But for that very reason, he does so only at the end. Instead of the easily foreseeable romance, this novel dwells on the vastly less comfortable relationship between Tim and his second wife, Carrie, a woman pressed upon him by Pastor Dennis. Although we never see things from Carrie's point of view, we watch in something like horror as she is transformed from a Christian bimbo with hardly a thought in her head to a woman so desperate for love that there is no costume she won't willingly don, no contortion she won't sincerely undertake in order to give her husband hot Christian sex. As an average sensual man, however, what Tim likes most about sex is surprise, and this is the one thing that Carrie can't deliver. He wondered sometimes if he should talk to her about this, but he wasn't quite sure how to go about it. It seemed like it would kind of defeat the purpose, telling someone to please be more spontaneous and then providing them with detailed instructions for how to go about it. Carrie Mason sets a benchmark showing how far Tom Parada can carry his comedy of suburban manners into the nightmare of bad marriage without souring his own good humor. That good humor is not inconsiderably buoyed by the screwball dynamics of his principal's romance. Ruth meets Tim in hostility. She is outraged when, as soccer coach, he leads his team, on which her younger daughter plays, in a post-game prayer. A more glinting social comedy would ride their confrontation to a showdown with plenty of fireworks, but that kind of staged entertainment would defeat the novel's purpose. When Ruth and Tim do get together to discuss their differences, their resolve is promptly weakened by the comfort that they find in one another. He looked puzzled, as if he couldn't quite understand what she was up to, blathering away about whatever popped into her head, as if this were just a friendly social visit. Ruth couldn't help wondering the same thing herself, and the only thought she could muster in her own defense was that it was hard to maintain an attitude of frosty politeness towards someone who was sitting in your kitchen offering helpful advice about your appliances. The abstinence teacher sets the bar very high for the fiction that its author has yet to write.
You've been listening to Books on Monday, a podcast from Portico at portifex.com.